Tom Fortino now joins us, the founder of the Alpha Wealth Group. You hear him Sunday mornings on WGN Radio 2 as part of the Alpha Wealth Hour. Hey, Tom, how are you today?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing today, John?
Pretty good. What's your read on these inflation numbers?
Well, it's kind of a yawner, I guess, for lack of a better word. It's 2.6. They expected 2.6. You know, it's trending lower. Their target's 2, as we just heard. So it you can see the market hasn't really reacted. They come a little bit off their highs, but there's just not a big reaction in the market from this. So it's kind of steady as she goes.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? You're the second or third person this week to comment on how flat things are. I'm not sure that's a bad thing, though, right? There don't seem to be a lot of market swings, not a lot of crazy news in the financial sector this week. Did I miss something here, Tom?
Well, you know, it's not a bad thing. The market has to take a breather at times. The market does have the pullbacks. These are considered healthy things. And sometimes it's considered what they call, you know, you're creating a base. And so there's another point where they can take off from there. So, you know, from a standpoint of a technical analysis, it's not a bad thing. And so these are good things. I mean, you know, some of the data has been a little troublesome, especially when we look at housing. But the market's been, you know, shrugging it off and kind of moving along. So these are good things.
Do you think the market's fairly priced right now, or do you think it's a little inflated?
Well, again, it's funny because there's arguments on both sides. It's well above its 200-day moving average, very high relative to that. It is a little pricey. The question is, you know, can it grow into those prices, just like any price on any asset? And so do we think the growth in the market, the earnings are going to, match up with what we're currently paying? Is it a little higher than normal? Absolutely. You know, the PE, yeah, the price to earnings is higher than normal. Yes. But again, you have to, the trend is your friend. The market's been doing well, and you want to stick with it for now.
I guess it depends on the equity you're talking about, the business or even the sector, right? I mean, plenty of businesses are underperforming year over year. So maybe there's some buying opportunities out there still.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting. If you look, like, you can look at SPY or the S&P, any ETF or index, you'll see the S&P year-to-date is up roughly 15%. There's also an equal-weighted S&P, that's RSP, that's the ticker. It's up only 3 or 4. So that tells you right there, right? I mean, it's not a broad participation in the market right now. And the reality is, it's just, this happens all the time. There's rotations into different sectors, and are there some opportunities out there? It's interesting. I heard someone explain, you know, with all the weight loss going on, not just the drugs, you know, for the Novo Nordisk and the Eli Lillys, but apparel, right? People have to buy new clothes. So, Burlington, Rock, you know, and it's actually, there's some trends that are happening. So for those visionaries out there, you know, maybe there's some opportunities there.
That's what I asked one of our guests last week, and I don't know if you have an answer to that, but if it's all about AI and chips, okay, I'll get in on that. Oh, wait, I missed the boat on that. But what will AI and chips beget, right? What's the next thing that they'll empower or power? So what should I be, what we kind of got to anticipate, you know, the economy or technology, but I wonder what the next hot sector will be. And by the way, when I brought that up, one of our guests, I think, said the medical sector will be a beneficiary of all these efficiencies, and there's some upside there. What's your thought about all that, Tom?
You know, I agree with a lot of what you just said, and there's so many different peripheral things that can happen here. The medical industry, not just from the standpoint of the efficiencies and the reduction of costs, which is going to hit a lot of these companies, but you've also got 11,000, where at peak, you know, you've heard that phrase, peak 65, 11,000 people are turning 65 every day. And so we see this trend that's occurring too. So these are things that we can take a look at. So yes, healthcare, certainly there's some opportunities there. And even within that AI sector you just spoke about, John, you know, because it's not just the chips, you've got the manufacturers of the chips, you've got the designers of the chips, you've got the chip equipment makers like ASML, and then you've even got, you mentioned air conditioning, Train Technologies, which is, they've actually rallied somewhat this year because they have to cool down these data centers. it's just really interesting when you start to look at where the opportunities are out there.
Talking to Tom Fortino, he is the founder and principal at the Alpha Wealth Group and the host of the Alpha Wealth Hour on WGN. Markets are kind of flat, and that's not a terrible thing since they're generally up these days. We're all having a good year, but really we're not all having a good year. Tom, are you worried about that mass of companies which aren't above the line this year? That's worrisome to some folks who are telling us that we're going to have a major correction sometime soon. What's your thought about that?
Well, I think it's a little overdone as far as, you know, we hear this, I don't know, we've heard it quite often, all these, there's only a handful of companies or so many companies are driving this. That's not that uncommon, really. I mean, I think, as I said, I don't know if that's necessarily a terrible thing. And so I'm not as concerned about that, you know, as far as the market. There's other things I think that are more problematic as it relates to the market, but not so much that we've got these high flyers or these certain companies that are driving the market. That's not that uncommon.
What's your concern then?
Well, I mean, the things like we've talked about in the past, John, you know, as far as debt, I mean, if you look at the housing market, and those numbers were pretty bad. Housing starts were down 19%. New home sales were down 11%. Retail sales have kind of flattened or come down. So is there a canary in the coal mine here? Is there something that's going to give? Those are things. I'm not saying they can't correct themselves. Look, if mortgage rates can come down, you know, maybe this thing turns around. But those are some things that, of course, and I guess you can always have those arguments, but those are a little concerning in this market, absolutely.
Where are you on? I'm drawing the line at 1.5 rate reductions this year. Are you today above or below? I bet you're below.
I'm still below, yeah. I'm going to go
one?
With
one or zero? One, yeah, right.
One. I'll go one.
And you know, almost, Tom, isn't it fair to read that as that's a good thing? I mean, lower interest rates would be nice, but that does say something about the health of the economy, right?
That's true. I mean, you know, I think they're going to – there's a couple things that are part of this. One is with the election and so on. There's the belief that, hey, they're not going to do anything prior to the election because then it looks like they're being political. In addition to that, I think they're just being overly cautious, which is not a bad thing. And so I think that's kind of swaying them because the way it went earlier – when the inflation really peaked. So those are some of the things that are driving it. And the economy has been fairly strong, and those are good things. So, yeah, I think that's why we won't see it happen until after the election.
2.6% is pretty close to 2% where I come from. Maybe in the world of interest rates or inflation, it's not. But it's interesting to me that there's not more of a celebration about that.
I agree. You know, I think, again, with the 2.6, this 2% target, it's what does that mean and where did they come up with that? Some of it is just based on, I don't know how many years ago they brought this into the fold where the Fed was made that one of their targets. It wasn't always that way. So, you know, I think we make a little much of it as far as they're getting to their 2% target. But so, we're looking at a relatively healthy economy overall.
Yeah. What is the concern then that people have when they come to you? I know you always talk about income that you want to generate, income distribution, and the taxes you pay when you are paying yourself in the latter half of your life. What's the big concern your clients have or you have for them, Tom?
Well, it's a number of things. The biggest, and you mentioned it, John, is the income. I mean, replacing income. You go into retirement. Boy, that's a new phase of life where all of a sudden the paychecks aren't coming in and you're going 25, 30 years or more without a paycheck. Of course, that's pretty daunting for, I think, anyone. And so that's the biggest concern, creating a plan or the confidence that, hey, I'm going to have income for the rest of my life and if I'm married for the rest of my spouse's life. And you solve that, I think that's kind of the cornerstone of it. And then from there, it's, okay, how do we minimize taxes on it and those other things? Certainly have a smart investment plan and then protect and pass on the assets to loved ones. That's the way I approach it as far as having a complete retirement plan.
What do you do now? Is it a Roth IRAs? I mean, is the thing you do now? Because if you're growing your nest egg now, what should you be doing now to minimize your taxes later on? Or is that something you worry about later on?
You know, I'm a big fan of what I call forward tax planning. The things you do today are going to impact you down the road. So, yes, tax-free ideas, the Roth, the money grows tax-free. The rest of your life, there's no required distributions. The tax rate on it is always zero. So we want to be focusing more on trying to incorporate some of that into our planning, because if tax rates go up in the future and we're retired, you know, every penny we pull out of that is going to be taxed at whatever the tax rate is in the future, you know, and then it impacts our taxable Social Security, it impacts our Medicare premiums, and then all of a sudden we have required distributions, and it just, that's why you hear the term a lot, a tax time bomb. I think that's an overlooked area. Tax-free Roth 401ks, Roth IRAs, Roth conversions, these are all just a few ideas to get to tax-free.
But don't you want to, isn't a Roth most effective when your income is lower, like earlier in life? If you are contributing now, if your income is higher, then you're paying a higher, then you're paying a higher percent in taxes if you're moved up in brackets. So I guess later in life, you don't want to pay the taxes up front. You want to delay them, right?
No, you're making a great point, John. A lot of people say, okay, well, I'm in a 24% tax bracket. I'm at 22. You know, I think I'm going to be in a lower tax bracket when I retire. That may or may not be true. We don't know. But I would say, you know, in some cases, I sometimes call it, like, we have investment diversification, tax diversification. You know, if you're contributing to your 401k, you can still contribute to a Roth separately from that. So now we get some tax-free monies. And so I would say still try to get some money into tax-free. You can do both. You know, 401ks, you can do half pre-tax, half tax, half tax-free. And so now what we're doing is we don't know where they're going to be in the future.
Right.
And again, it's not just that, but how it impacts your Social Security and your Medicare and your investment income taxes. A lot of things that come into play that so that's why I would say think about doing some tax-free. I think you'll be happy.
Yeah, maybe one hedges against the other. Tom Fortino is the founder and principal at the Alpha Wealth Group, and he's the host of the Alpha Wealth Hour. You can hear that at WGN Radio, Sunday mornings at 7. Okay, Tom, have a good show this week. We'll talk to you another day.
You too. Have a great weekend. Take care, John.
You betcha. Talk about the big pictures in the economy, as we did with Tom Fortino a couple of moments ago. But every now and then, we just like to tell you a little bit about a business that's making a go of it out there. Here is Kara Demergen-Huss, a senior vice president at TCCI Manufacturing. They're in the business of air conditioning compressors, one of the world's leaders in Decatur, Illinois. Kara, thanks for joining us. You're on WGN's Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
So that's you in a sentence, according to me. But tell me a little bit more about your business. What do you all do there in Decatur?
Absolutely. TCCI Manufacturing is a global leader of air conditioning compressors, both for the combustion vehicles, but also, more importantly, the electric vehicles on the road. We're making air conditioning to cool the cabin, but also a critical component in cooling the battery as part of the thermal management system.
Oh, I never thought about that.
We have offices in six countries around the world and are about ready to really break ground, breaking new facility, $45 million public-private investment in Decatur, Illinois. So really excited to bring U.S. manufacturing and reshore.
Yeah. Is that your innovation hub I read a little bit about?
Yeah, absolutely, John. It's our Illinois EV Innovation Hub, one of the major priorities for the state of Illinois and helping lead the transformation of the transportation industry under one roof in Decatur, Illinois. We'll have one of the only made-in-America electric compressor component manufacturing facilities in the United States. We'll also have a world-leading climatic center to test EV vehicles against climate conditions. So as you can imagine, really testing how electric vehicles are doing in climate, whether that's minus 30 to plus 130, solar, wind, all really critical things to advance technology in this industry. And then third, and probably the most exciting for me, John, is that we will be one of the only companies in the United States to have a community college embedded inside of our facility with three classrooms and immersive access onto our plant floor for workforce training and direct-to-career jobs in the EV and clean energy sector, as well as 2+2 programs with seven of our higher education public institutions here throughout Illinois.
Well, that is innovative. I never thought about it, air conditioning in the interior of the cabin of a vehicle. But if it's a battery-powered vehicle, we all know how batteries can get hot on our phones.
Absolutely.
Imagine the battery driving your 2,000-pound car. So there's a separate cooling or air conditioning system under the hood, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think in the past we've thought about compressors as a commodity product, but you're absolutely right. When we think about it today in an electric vehicle, we have to start thinking about it differently. Our engineers are working with our OE customers, whether that's Navistar or Lion Electric or Caterpillar around the world. We're starting early because that piece, that compressor, is such a critical part of driving performance, range, efficiency in a vehicle.
And if it's going to get to 130 degrees, it was 124 in Saudi Arabia the other day, and it was 118 or 114 in Phoenix. So that must be a whole new challenge for your industry.
Yeah, and we're used to it. We are a commercial vehicle manufacturer, so Class 3 to Class 8 is our wheelhouse. So we're talking anything from your Amazon delivery vehicles all the way up to your heavy-duty trucks, buses, and transport refrigeration products. So we're used to dealing with really extreme conditions. Think about the defense industry, and those types in the combustion vehicle. We've been doing air conditioning. My father bought the York division of BorgWarner back in the mid-'80s, so we've been doing it a really long time.
Well, but you don't actually build the vehicles, but the air conditioning in some of those vehicles, right?
The air conditioning compressor in those vehicles, correct. Yeah. We are a tier one OE supplier to those industries. And what's so important about this EV innovation hub is that we'll be bringing Made in America compressor component manufacturing to Illinois, servicing the North American market so that our customers can increase their USMCA content, which is critical today. So, we wouldn't be here doing this without Governor Pritzker, the Department of Commerce, and a lot of our local legislators who've really helped us transition this industry and make Illinois a leader across the United States.
Are you worried about the softening of the EV market, at least for, for cars, maybe not so much for heavy duty vehicles, but the infrastructure doesn't seem to be there right now and people are maybe pulling back or regretting their EV purchases? What's your forecast for that?
I think that's a great question, John. I think it's definitely softening just in terms of pushing out a little bit, but I think it's still aggressively moving. In the commercial vehicle space, we're seeing things like school buses on the road today. We're seeing heavy duty and medium size trucks on the roads globally. In Europe and Asia, they're advancing quickly. North America is catching up fast, though. From the automotive space, I am a Tesla owner. I was an early adopter. I've had one for 7 years, and I just bought my daughter a pre-owned one. Was able to get her into a pre-owned Tesla for under $30,000. And I think there's so much infrastructure, and we know that Tesla's starting to share their charging units across the space.
Right.
And so I think you're going to see, it's coming. There's no doubt. And it's coming aggressively. I think I saw some stats on where we see we're going to be. In Illinois alone, we're expecting 1 million vehicles on the road by over the next 10 years. So I think that, this is coming. We may see that curve just taking us out maybe a year or two, but we're producing products through our compressor lines right now for these 2026, 2027 vehicles coming down the road. So they're coming.
Kara is the TCCI Manufacturing Senior Vice President We're out of time, Kara. How many? But I'm glad that we've learned a little bit about your business there in Decatur and around the world. How many folks work for TCCI Manufacturing?
Sure. We have globally around 1,000 employees, and we're growing quickly as we bring our new hub on. We expect to have a 10 times to 12 times growth rate here over the next few years.
Let's talk again then. Kara, thanks for your time today.
Thanks so much, John. Take care.
Kara Demirjian-Huss, Senior Vice President there in Decatur. More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. DeVry University has announced a partnership with Chicago's Innovation Hub 1871, aimed at fostering and advancing artificial intelligence advancements and entrepreneurship. As part of the partnership, DeVry participated in 1871's annual AI Innovation Summit this week during Chicago AI Week. The event centered around AI innovation and critical industry topics. DeVry University uses AI learning technologies to improve student and classroom experiences. In 2020, the school introduced its first AI and machine learning course. It also runs an AI lab. North Chicago-based AbbVie has acquired biotech company Celsius Therapeutics in a deal that's reportedly worth $250 million. Celsius has developed new therapies to fight inflammatory bowel disease and is currently a privately held company. The Celsius drug would be the ninth treatment in AbbVie's immunology pipeline and joins two other AbbVie drugs already approved for treating IBD conditions like Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. One of those drugs is Skyrizi. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Now the business of food. Now Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And it's a Mr. Fizz Friday. Gardening guru Jim Fizzell is with us today. And before we get into the gardening stuff, Jim, I understand congratulations are in order.
Well, first of all, hi, Steve. I haven't said hello to you yet today. But yes, we just received notice that our 16th great-grandchild was born out in Colorado. What a joy. Little girl, Cadence Rose.
Cadence, C-A-D-E-N-C-E?
Right.
What's the origin of that?
I don't know. The kids haven't said what it is, and I know Rose is the grandmother's name.
Oh, that's nice. Well, congratulations on number 16, Jim. And before we get to your gardening advice, I want to thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. And speaking of tools, we're going to be using a lot of tools as we get ready for the 4th of July.
Well, there's a lot of stuff to do this weekend to get ready. First of all, let's look at the lawns. Edge along the walks and beds. This will help spruce up the looks of the area. If you haven't done it already, use a sharp spade or an edger, and then mow it 2.5 inches. This is the time to fertilize, too. We've gone through the fertilizer that was put on the spring. If you're irrigating, the full rate. If you're not irrigating, probably half rate of the fertilizer, because the grass certainly isn't going to grow as fast with not much water. Out in the flower garden, get out and do some weeding, either hoeing or pulling. I've noticed that some of my perennials, because of the amount of water that we had earlier, are getting quite tall. So we're doing some staking and caging of those tall plants so they don't fall over. And it's time to disbud some of the faded blooms on things that have already flowered. If you do that, you're going to get repeated bloom on some of these things. If you don't trim them, they're going to try to make seeds. Then in the vegetable garden, you need to inspect for bugs and diseases right now, because the plants are still small. They're just beginning to get into production, and you need to treat appropriately before you lose the plants and lose your crop that you're trying to produce. And if you've done all these things prior to the holiday, you're going to be ready for it and put up the flag, watch a parade, have a picnic, see the fireworks, enjoy, and keep it safe.
Okie doke. Jim Fizzell, our gardening guru. And on the food calendar, June Dairy Month continues, so go out and grab an ice cream cone or milkshake or root beer float or something. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. John Williams here, now with Anuj Shah, who is a managing director at Stax. Anuj, you're on WGN Radio. How are you today?
I'm well. How are you, John? Thanks for having me.
Pretty good. I'm just learning about your business, but tell us a little bit about what you all do.
Sure. So we are a strategic advisory firm, a consulting firm. I'm based out of Boston. We have an office in Chicago as well, New York, London, and Colombo, Sri Lanka. We work primarily with private equity firms, and what we do is commercial due diligence. So when that company is looking to make an investment in another company, or when the investor is looking to make an investment in a company, we do the commercial due diligence for them. When they actually own the asset and are looking to grow value during the ownership period, we will do work that we would generally call value creation work. There's different sort of subsets around that. And then when they're looking to sell the asset, we will help do the sell side or the exit planning and do the work to, you know, have the next buyer or appeal to the next buyer on why this would be an attractive asset or company for them to buy. Yeah. I lead the ESG and the impact advisory practice at Stax.
So if I were going to invest in a business, I want to make sure this is a good investment, and you troubleshoot that up front, huh?
Exactly. I mean, for the most part, what we're looking at is the growth opportunity. Where is the story? Where can they actually increase their market share, et cetera? So that's, it's fun work. It's busy work.
Yeah. It sounds like diverse work, like you must put your sort of a hand in a lot of different pots. And the word that pops up in the stories about you and your business is sustainability. Talk about that a little bit.
Yes, I will. So the way that we think about sustainability, I mean, a lot of, the way that the world is thinking today is about the climate transformation or climate transition or energy transition. And there are a lot of opportunities that are happening in across industries and sectors to prepare for sort of what we think is going to be a big change in the way that we operate as a nation when it comes to energy. We would sort of say, or I'd say to clients, you know, take a step back, zoom out a little, and let's talk about a sustainability transformation. And across industries and across sectors, because of regulatory concerns, but certainly because of consumer demand, because of awareness, because of brand value, there's a little bit of a sustainability transformation that has to happen across various industries and sectors. I'd say applicable almost across any industry and sector. And so that's what we mean when we talk about sustainability. Where can we, if it's reducing the carbon footprint, if it's reducing packaging waste for a company that manufactures items, and in some ways you would think about sustainability when it comes to workers of decreasing turnover rates, when it comes to data privacy or data security would be reducing the number of breaches. So there, it's somewhat of a broad encompassing term, but what we do for our clients is certainly to figure out what makes sense for the business that they're looking to evaluate, or for the management team, you know, what makes sense for that business.
Are you talking about on the production end, like actually how they perform or provide services, or are you talking about the marketing of it? Hey, we're a green company.
It's not just the marketing, you know, it's certainly how can we embed sustainability into your strategy, and how does that strategy, how can that actually create value for you as the company? So really it has to be tied back to financial performance. Otherwise, most of these companies wouldn't be looking meaningfully at this. We have to demonstrate to our clients that there's value to be gained here.
Well, let me ask you, what are they missing? I mean, here you guys come in and say, hey, what about this? You should do that. Why didn't they think of that? What do you see that they don't?
Honestly, it's a lot of the times management teams are focused on the day-to-day operations and the day-to-day running of their company. And so they hire advisors like us to help them in some ways. You know, the way that we would think about it is to think about like widening the aperture of the lens at which you look at risk. You know, potentially there's risk here, right? If you don't do this, your business may suffer. But also, if you do this, here are the opportunities. So you sort of look at it from a bifurcated view of where is there risk, and then where is there actually value to be had?
Right. One last question about that. Is it hard to persuade them sometimes to take your advice, or do they not have any choice?
It shouldn't be hard if we can connect the dots, if we can demonstrate to them, and this is the work that we do, that there is, again, value to be had, right? And that's important for us. And I think when we talk about the ESG space specifically, you know, it's gotten politicized in the U.S. And a lot of people think that it's focused on pushing, you know, liberal woke values. And that's not the case. If you can show that there is connections, you connect the dots. I was speaking to colleagues today, and I was talking about how you actually have to connect the dots to the financial impact. And if you can do that, and if you can do it in such a way that it's accessible, that it makes sense, you're not using terms like scope 1, scope 2, scope 3 emissions. You're talking about what's your annual spend on energy? And if we can reduce your annual spend on energy by transitioning to renewable energy sources, it makes much more sense. It becomes much more tangible to the management team of a company.
Anuj Jha is a managing director at Stax, STAX. He advises private asset managers, investment banks, and others on these kind of solutions. A really interesting sector. Anuj, thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome, John. Thanks for having me.